Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. And all three of us are professional illustrators. We've all worked for all the major publishers in the business. We've published somewhere around 50 or 75 books between us, and we've all taught illustration at university art programs.
Each week we pick a different topic in illustration. Sometimes we agree, most of the time we argue, but each time you're going to learn something brand spanking new.
Excellent. That's good.
I like arguing this time.
Let's argue.
You guys want to argue? Okay. Yeah. NFTs. Let's talk about NFTs.
Go to Jake's Instagram.
You guys. And you this just is suggest you're doing an NFT, and boy, people cannot.
This is May 12th.
Cannot deal.
Luke, scroll back to May 12th.
One nice thing about NFTs.
Yeah.
The thing that frustrates me, I don't want to talk about this, but the thing that frustrates me is I feel like the goalpost is always being moved. So there's all these problems with NFT. You find a platform that solves these problems one by one, but then there's like even deeper problems now that you didn't know about. And now you have to deal
like,
with those. And then,
it's like when you have a relationship with someone and there's a problem, you know, like let's say you got your kid and he has a problem. And so then you help him solve it. And then he creates another problem. And you're like, and finally you dig down, you're like, you're just negative today. Like you're just in a bad mood today.
You don't care. You just want to tear it down. So anyways, NFT stuff aside, I do want to ask one thing. Lee White has a really good idea here. And I want you to walk us through it really quick. Then we'll get to our questions. But explain to me your reason for
this.
Explain to me your reason for having a slide in your home.
Well, okay, wait, they need context first.
Little context. I'm looking at building my own home. And the first thing on my list is I want a slide.
Now, first off, I hate it when people say they're going to build their own home and they're not going to swing a hammer. So just let's say it in the right
way. You're having a home built.
You're going to have a home built.
I don't know. Who are you talking to? I've remodeled three homes. I would not mind being in there.
You're not going to build your
own home. That's true. Lee will be showing up every day. And
we have to
talk to the
contractor. I need to make sure. Anyway, so regardless of who's actually swinging the hammer, whether I'm having it built or whether I'm the one building it, I would like to consider having, it sounds stupid now that I say it out loud. I want a slide in my home because you can never, in my opinion, you could never have a bad day if you start out sliding from one floor to the other.
Right.
Unless.
And how can you finish an argument upset? That's the thing that I love about it. Like, say you're arguing with your wife or whatever, arguing with the kid, and then it's like, all right, let's just go downstairs. And then you slide downstairs. How can you be mad at someone after that?
That's exactly right. You're sliding down trying to be angry. There's an illustration there. I want you guys to draw someone sliding down but angry.
Okay, but here's how you can have a bad day. If you're a little sweaty, hot and sweaty, and you've got shorts on and you stick all the way down.
No. If I have a slide, I'm going to solve all these problems. Like there'll be some like potato sacks at the top of the stairs.
Yeah. Or like you'll use some sort of microfiber,
non-sticky,
you know, material that doesn't.
There's none of the problems that come with a regular. There's like five, you know, I want to have the slide. And then I've got listed the problems that come with a slide. There's sticky slide. There's bees. Seems like there's always a bee around a slide.
They love slides. They do.
They love the undercarriage of a slide. Hot slide. Yeah. And then there's also that wavy action that happens on the slide where you're sliding down. It goes, tunk, you know, as you slide over that wavy part. Like, no.
Do you know what the worst thing? I hated this one on the playground growing up. Thankfully, you don't see them anymore. I think they've phased them out in the 90s. But it's those slides that are just a series of rollers. Right?
I know what you're talking about. I haven't seen those in a long time.
But your finger always gets caught in those as you're going down or something. And that would happen to me every time. Like they're just far apart enough for a kid's finger to like roll in between there.
Oh, that sounds awful.
You're rolling down.
Well, also on my list, you know, I have a 5-point slide rating scale.
Right. Of course you did.
But no. One of the biggest pet peeves too is too much. I don't know why I gather so much static electricity going down those plastic slides, but I mean, I am seriously radiating electricity by the time I'm at the bottom of it. And the kids aren't doing that. Like, my son slides down, he's fine. My wife slides down. Of course, I make the whole family slide. That's our thing.
They should have an EV charging station next to one of the slides. You just charge your Tesla.
Ion D electrifier kind of thing. You touch it and then, you know, this is going to be the best indoor architecturally designed slide in the United States.
If you don't do that, at least do the fireman pole.
The fireman pole is second, and there's a couple of issues that go with that. First off, bees.
Your five point rating system, number one, does it have bees? You know, loses one star for if it has bees.
Do you guys know how to make the slide go a lot faster?
No,
a metal slide. You take out of the
vegetable trash cans. Oil. Is that what?
No. Out of the trash cans, you get the wax paper cups that they don't sell that much anymore. But
I'm reaching into the trash can for this.
Yeah. If you're a serious slider, you get those and you sit on them and you go down and the wax from those cups comes off on the metal, makes them super slick for the people coming after.
I typically just grab whatever's in the trash and throw it on a slide.
I'm serious. That we used to do that.
I had no idea that was a thing. Yeah. You could do that.
Well, I was right. Professional.
Can we move on to questions now?
Sure.
Please.
We need to talk about slides for a little bit longer.
No.
There's still some listeners we need to get rid of.
I'm just watching people like poking their head in this room and they're being like, never mind. And slowly shutting the door, going on to the next podcast.
I've got to tell you guys, I was sitting this one out, but I've got to jump back in. There was a piece of equipment. We call it the rocket ship. Mm-hmm. Massive. This is in my childhood, right? At this one park, massive playground equipment. There was an actual ship that went up really high and there was a ramp. There was a ramp that was designed to be just a ramp to walk up in the middle of it. Yeah. But when we would get those wax cups and slide down on them, we could turn that into a slide. And then it went down into the bridge of shaky planks, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we would rock it off the platform down into that. onto that. I mean, just crash down. Like,
oh, awesome.
We took their design of what they didn't intend and turned it into something even cooler. Anyway, just thought I'd.
That's a classic example of like a developer thinking it's going to be used one way, completely not being used that way. Okay. First question comes from Mary. To post or not to post? That is my question. Hello, Jake, Lee, and Will. Your podcast is excellent, and I learned something brand spanking new every time I listen. A little nod to Lee there.
Nice.
I'm getting ready to query an Illustrated dummy. I have a website and Instagram account devoted to my children's book illustrations. Should I include the illustrations that are in my dummy on my website portfolio and or on social media accounts for more exposure, or keep them under wraps in case the book gets acquired and the publisher agent wants to control that piece? Thank you for your advice and wisdom, Mary. All right, what do you guys think? Do you post the stuff that you're submitting to publishers, or do you keep it?
You post it. I think that's one of the biggest flaws in thinking like an amateur, is that this property has this value and in its entirety, and you can't let it, almost like it's a non-disclosure agreement kind of idea that it hasn't been picked up. Whatever you show can generate interest for it to be picked up. And, you know, to use an analogy, kind of, I think of like some student film projects that people put out, they put out like a little short or something. And then all of a sudden they get either hired by a studio because of the short, or the short gets turned into something bigger. You know, and they're not like, oh, this short's the greatest idea. We need to make it into a feature film and not show the short to anybody. So that's kind of how I see this. It's like a couple spreads, a hint at what the story is, and just roll the dice. I mean, there's always the idea that, oh, somebody's going to take this concept and make their own book out of it. That's totally legal, and that could happen anyway. So just, I'd say mm-hmm. go run with it. If it's good, maybe it gets some attention.
Yeah. What do you think, Will?
I agree. I think you got to get your work out there. And there's so many people worry about locking their stuff down. And you can tell amateur work when you see this big copyright C in the bottom, you know, in their signature mm-hmm. versus professional work where pros just don't do that. You got to get your work out there and be seen. And you could get other work, you know, other work could be coming in off of the stuff that you're showing. So I would, I would definitely err on getting it out there.
I always go back to, I don't know who said this originally, this quote, but it's like, and I probably don't even have the words correctly, but an artist's worst problem isn't piracy, it's obscurity.
Yeah.
You know,
so true.
It's like once you know your stuff's getting pirated and copied and put on Redbubble and stuff, then you know you're doing something right. You're doing something of value that people want. And then you could deal with that later. But I think a publisher is going to be fine knowing that there's some artwork on your Instagram account or on your website to show what it's doing, you know, to show what you're capable of doing. And then it also kind of starts building a fan base for the thing that you're doing as well. So I think you're okay. And to actually speak to this, I am working on a book proposal for CC and Benson. And CC and Benson are a couple of characters that I have been drawing on and off for the last 10 years. And I've been maybe even longer now, since 2009, so like 12 years. And so I've been posting them. I did like Inktober drawings with them. You can go on my website and see these characters. And I'm getting like, people are just familiar with them when they see them. So when a children's book does come out, yes, I'll be making new illustrations for that children's book. But there might be some illustrations that I've already done that could end up in it. Who knows? But the thing is there's already, I've built hopefully somewhat of a, if not a fan base, then at least an acknowledgement of, hey, there's these characters that Jake made, you know? So I'd say post it. I would also though, if it is like a really unique, cool idea, something that clearly has never been done before, and you are trying to get it published, maybe hold on to it until you're very serious about getting it published. You know, maybe it's not something you throw out there and 5 years later you're like, take it to a publisher. It might be the year that you do it, because then you do open yourself up to somebody being inspired by that and they go do their version of it. You know, they don't straight up copy you, but you know, they do their version of it and they get the book deal. And then here you come along and say, you know, here's my thing. And people are like, well, we already got enough of that. You know, could come up with something else. That's kind of the problem on a bigger, grander scale with Edgar Rice Burroughs, his John Carter of Mars stories, right? So these novels came out in the early 1900s, you know, right around that like pre-World War I era. All of these like really cool Mars stories, Martian stories. He goes to Mars and he established a bunch of like science fiction tropes that went on and inspired, you know, Flash Gordon, Star Wars, mm-hmm. Any, you know, Avatar, any of these things. So you see all this stuff that are in these very well-known properties. And then Disney comes out with John Carter, the original thing. You go and watch that movie and you're like, I've seen this all before. You know, I've seen weird battles on, on foreign planets. I've seen this main character. I've seen this side character. And it's because it was original to those stories, but it had been such a good influence on other things. So that's sort of like a bigger example of maybe some of the problems you can have, but that's if you're really charting new ground and like making something new. But if, you know, if you're like, it's a couple of, you know, it's two dogs who are best friends and, you know, they have these fun adventures, you know, that's very cool. That'll be fun children's book idea, but there's a million animal friend who go on adventures. You know, there's Toad and Frog, there's Toot and Puddle, there's, mm-hmm. you know, all these things. And when I did Cece and Benson, I'm just like, oh, I'm taking that genre and I'm doing my version. What two animals am I going to put together? And what, you know, what's the conceit for their crazy situations? So that's why I'm like fine sharing it and like having it out there.
Do you see that happening with artwork as much? I mean, like, I don't feel like I see too, everything that I see reminds me of something else. So like, I could see that for writing. Cause you know, mm-hmm. you have these story ideas that really truly are original. Do you think that with the visual arts, it's someone's going to get they're not going to get the story from looking at a single piece of art.
I know, but yeah, they're not going to get the story. You're right. But oftentimes if the visuals are iconic enough, like let's say Olivia, right? So she's this cool pig. Like pig character.
You know, what if fond of
you never really got into Olivia
for me.
You know, but let's say you had a cool pig character that you were sitting on and you're like, I'm not quite ready to share it. And you held on to it. And then someone else comes out. Well, this is an argument for sharing it earlier. You know, if you share that you've got this pig thing, then perhaps you sort of staked your claim and someone else who's going to do like a pig in a dress might be like, well, I can't do that. I got to shift my idea. So there is that. But then there's also, you know, it could influence it to be, well, I'm not going to do a pig, but I'm going to do a hippo. And so they go on and they do a hippo who's like into fancy stuff or whatever. And then it becomes a publishing thing. And then you come along and say, well, I've got a pig who's into fancy things, and ballet. And they're like, well, we've already got, you know, this thing is established. So those are like, I don't know, some of the pitfalls. This is like spitballing. This is like a first pass answering this question. And it's very, this is me being very like fresh and maybe not thinking this through 100%, but that's kind of where I'm seeing is like, you just have to play that dance a little bit of how unique is my idea versus how close am I to going to market with it, you know, and then play those off of each other.
I tell you, one of my pet peeves though, in publishing, it sounds like over time, I just hate publishing. I want to add a disclaimer. I do not hate publishing, but there's some problems with it. And one of the problems that just comes up, sort of veering a little bit off topic, but is how quickly the actual publishing industry reacts if there's a book about something that, a couple of years back, Peter Brown did the Creepy Carrots book. I had a book about turnips at the same time, just completely separate vegetable, totally different story. Mm-hmm. But that the rejection I got on that manuscript was
Creepy Carrots.
The book is already out there.
Yeah,
it's so mm-hmm. it wasn't even close to the same story. Had nothing mm-hmm. to do with it. It just happened to have a vegetable as part of the story,
and as part of the title, right?
Stupid.
Was it part of the title? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a book that my closest I got with Scholastic was almost, I thought I had sold it. And it was too close to Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus. So, but it wasn't even close to the same story.
But that was the rejection.
Yeah.
Stupid.
I just think it is a reactionary industry is what it is. There's an editor who can kind of like see the vision for something new and fresh. They sort of risk their reputation on it. And sometimes these things work out great. Sometimes they don't. But when they work out great, boy, everybody wants to do everybody wants to do something that like that, or everyone's afraid afraid of something like that, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Like, that's like right. Want to avoid it. All right. Should we move on to the next question?
Yeah.
Did we answer that one good enough?
Yeah, I think we did.
Hope so.
Maybe we each read one of these things. Why do you get to read them all?
I don't know.
Well, it seems like you're like the leader.
I'll read this one.
I would love it if you guys carried some of the weight.
But Will is going to read this like Axl Rose. Axl Rose voice.
This one comes out from Beverly. I have heard the question over and over, no matter how many times I heed the advice, I get no results. And the title of this one is, but seriously, how do I get work?
Like, this is real, why I read like, the questions, because I'll read the subject first.
No, see, I gave them a hook. So they're like, wait, what? And then they're really listening for that title. So, but seriously, how do I get work? I want to be a freelancer.
Like in reality.
Like in reality. Yeah.
Like, how do you do it? Okay, go. Sorry. I'm sabotaging you.
Yeah.
You are.
And that's cool. Look how bad Will's doing.
I'm used to it. If I want to be a freelancer.
I'm keeping my mouth shut.
If I want to be a freelancer, how in the world do I get in contact with someone or some way to figure out how to get work? I've sent out postcards, looked for names of art directors and agents, sent out direct emails, searched the internet for any jobs, tried to grow my following. I cannot get a freelancing job to save my life, and so far, just sell on Etsy. I would love to get editorial work or do backgrounds, book covers, or anything. Very frustrating. Maybe I'm just not good enough to warrant a response. Please send help. So I want to take a stab at this first.
Oh, so you want to read the question and give the answer?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've got the mic right now. So basically, I was looking at this and I'm like, I can't answer this question without seeing the work.
Oh, but you can. See, that's where you don't see between the lines. Like, well, the pro podcaster, Michael Jackson.
Well, you'll get your chance. But in general, for anyone who's thinking about sending in a question like this that pertains to their work, send us a link so that we can look at your work and we can give you direct feedback on what we think. My skepticism is that there's a problem with the work, you know, and that's where I immediately go. Now, I would love to be surprised and look at the work and go, wow, okay, there's something wrong here, because I fielded this question from the famous Brett Hellquist. He and I were friends. We went to the same school. He was a year behind me at BYU in the illustration program.
Tell us why he's famous.
Well, for the series of Unfortunate Events books, and he's done a bunch of children's books, bunch of children's book covers, a lot of YA covers, and just as an industry name right now, every editor, every publisher, everybody knows who Brett Hellquist is. One or two years out of school, I had been freelancing for 3 years. He was out a year and a half or 2 years. And we would talk from time to time on the phone. And he's like, Will, I'm thinking about quitting. The exact same thing that I'm reading in this letter right here. And he just says, you know, I just don't know how much longer I can do it. I'm like, okay, what are you doing? He says, I'm working for a temp agency. And I'm trying to freelance at night. I'm trying to send out postcards. I'm trying to get my work out there. And he had me on his mailing list. And he was sending me, every time he'd do a postcard, he'd send them to me. And I'm like, Brett, I'm getting your postcards. And they're amazing. They were much better. I mean, like, Brett, your work is better than the stuff I'm doing. And I'm busy with freelance work. So how many people are you mailing to? And by the way, this is might not answer your particular question, Beverly, because I can't see your work. This might help a little bit. But basically, he said, well, I'm mailing to 50 people on my list. And I had been mailing to 1,200. And I'm like, Brett, I'm mailing 1,200 postcards every other month, and you're mailing 50 every other month? No one knows who you are. No one has seen your work. 50 people is nothing. 1,200 is nothing. If your work is good, you're going to get work if the right people see your work. It's cause and effect. If you have great work, and the right people are seeing your work, you're going to get asked to dance. Right. But almost every time I've seen this question, and I look at the work and I go, well, they're either really missing really low and think that they're doing really good, or they're really in that middle ground where it's just crowded of people. And in my book, What They Don't Teach in Art School, I have a graph in there of where you need to be. I answer this question specifically with a graph. And I mean, like, you have got to be, your work has to be really, really high up there. And compared to the people that are getting regular work, if you're going to take work away from them. So that would be, anyway, Lee, take it away.
That's interesting. To add to what you're saying there, I used to have part of a lecture that I would give to a class of, like, you know, is illustration a great career for you? Well, for some people, it really is. Like, the top 3%, they write their own ticket. They can do whatever they want, right? They have multiple offers.
Right.
The next little
turning down work.
Turning down a lot of work, yeah. Those are the people that, you know, the top end, you know, if you have the bell-shaped curve, and then as you get into that, you know, next tier, you got people that are getting pretty good jobs. Maybe they got to ask around, or they, you know, they got to hustle a little bit. That top of the bell, those people really got to hustle, because there's people all over the place. And, you know, is illustration a great career for them? It's probably hard. You know, once you get to the low part of the curve, now you're running into a lot of rejection. So it's a different field for whoever is the artist involved. It really is. But good people always get work. And I want to emphasize that. That's sort of what Will is saying. They almost can. Oh, that's pretty good, Will. He's showing me the graph.
Yeah, there's the you know.
Good work just always will always be in need. And you won't have to look for it too hard. You got to do some stuff. But if you're that middle of the bell-shaped curve, you are going to have to do it all. And I can say that because I feel like I'm in the middle of the bell-shaped curve. Especially in the beginning, had to do it all. I was not one of the people that was fast-tracked. Like, I feel like Dan Santat, I think, was fast-tracked. You know, he's graduating school. We've talked about him on the podcast before. He goes to the SCBWI conference. He gets a book deal right out of the gate. Oh, great. You know, so ask him, how is it to be a children's book illustrator? Well, it's probably awesome. Like, he didn't have to do anything. But for me, it didn't come that quick. I had a couple of, like, kind of iffy jobs in the beginning. I was getting work, so I'm not terrible, but they weren't what Dan was getting. So, you know, maybe I'm more in the middle of the curve than he was. And maybe, hopefully, I've moved up to the front of that thing, because I now do have options. But I do want to go over this specific person, because I agree with Will, it's probably a work problem. But just reading the question specifically and kind of looking for little clues, I see a few things in here. One thing that's like a pro is she can't get a job, but she is selling on Etsy. Okay, so that means something is resonating with somebody. That's a great thing. That means there's something working. So there's a glimmer of hope here. So what I get concerned about is the next sentence where it says, I would love to get editorial work, do backgrounds, book covers, or anything. That's a really odd statement to me for somebody who's doing a focused marketing campaign with postcards and gathering reference for which who to send it to. That's like a shotgun approach. Like, hey, I can draw. Now somebody give me something to draw. No way would I have ever written that sentence out of school. It would have said, hey, I'm trying to get work in children's books. I go to the SCBWI conferences. I'm taking all the great classes from childrensbookpro.com, which comes out next week. You know, you're doing all the things that you can do in that industry. Now, what do I do? And then it's exactly what Will said. We'd have to see the work at that point. But to me, you're selling on Etsy. Good thing. You're all over the place in terms of the work you're trying to get. So that,
really,
I would say, would point to where
that's a really good point. And keep in mind that I know that, you know, Milton Glaser said this one time. He came and talked to us, the very famous graphic designer. And when I was going to school, he came in and he said, a great art director, well, he said, most art directors need 10 pieces that are of the same quality in the same genre to risk their career on choosing you. Okay. So this speaks to what Lee's saying is, if your work is, if you have, your portfolio reflects all this kind of work, these different markets, then you probably don't have 10 editorial pieces that are of the same quality and really backing each other up. He went on to say a really good art director needs 3 to 5 pieces, and a great art director only needs to see one piece. But most art directors need to see 5 or 10 pieces that are of the same quality and the same genre, because they are risking their career by choosing you, especially if they've never worked for you before. Once they start working with you, they'll just keep working with you because it's easier to go with the person they know who delivers on time, who delivers the quality, and you just make their life easier. And so it really is easy. The freelance illustration gets easier and easier over time. There really is a situation of the haves and the have-nots. But you can earn your way in. That's the neat thing. It's not a birthright thing. It's hard to get in.
Yeah, it's like a merit-based thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally back up what both of you said. And I think maybe what you need to do next is probably have a professional sit down with you and look at your work and just kind of give you either a pat on the back, you're doing it right. Just switch up your marketing, focus your marketing, or actually you need to go back and work on some fundamentals and kind of level up here and there. And I think that would help too. How do you get a professional look at your work? How do you do that, guys?
Well, like I said, the SCBWI conference is a great start. If it's books.
Yeah. You know what? And I'm just going to throw this out there as an idea, but if you live in a place that has graphic design firms, you may find that you could get a portfolio review. Like a lot of them will let you drop off your portfolio. They may not do the kind of work that uses illustration, but they may. And you might even say, hey, I'm a new illustrator and I'd love to get some feedback on my portfolio. And there might be someone there that can give you some good advice. Especially if you can find out where magazines are being designed. A lot of graphic design firms design magazines. There aren't that many magazines anymore, unfortunately, but if you do a little homework, you might actually be able to find someone that can do that. I would love to get to do a follow-up on this question with Beverly. I'd love for you to send us.
You'd love to sit with her.
What? Yeah, I would. I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to give her feedback.
That's the other thing too. It's like, just reach out to 20 different illustrators, professional illustrators, and say, hey, here's a piece. Here's two pieces. Can I just get some feedback?
Mm-hmm.
Don't overwhelm them. And then, you'll get a percentage of them who reply. Some will be too busy to respond, but it doesn't hurt to just go and ask in the email, just heartfelt, hey, I'm having a hard time. Just what do you think? Yeah. Short, brief email. Look at this piece. Yeah. Give me some pointers.
And make it safe for them. Make it safe for the person to give you feedback. Say, I want you to say this in there. I cannot grow unless you give me honest feedback. Don't worry, I can take it. Just add that in there and give them the permission to go, okay. I've told this on this podcast before. I had someone on Facebook reach out to me and ask for a critique. And I erred on giving them an honest critique. And this person came back at me so hard with, criticism of my critique and how harsh I was and how wrong I was. And I'm like, okay, you didn't want a critique. Life's too short for BS. And if you want a massage, go to a masseuse, I mean, like,
right.
Boom.
Right. Okay. Lee, you want to read the third question?
I do. This is from Donna. How to deal with the fear of success. Dear sirs, thanks for providing a space to ask questions. I can praise what you guys do all day, but I'll just dive right to the point. I'd rather they just praise us for a little while.
Yeah, just a little bit, please.
That earns some points with us. I've reached out to a few artists, art agents, and local publishers with my work. Based on their feedback, my skill is good enough, but the quantity is lacking. They gave me a few ideas for projects, and I've come up with a list of illustrations I want to do. But I was hit with a sudden lack of motivation, a sense of purposelessness, and overwhelmed. While I can't fully explain the reasons for those feelings, a part of it might be the fear of success, the fact that I need to give this my 100% and the knowledge it's going to be a long and lonely road. Ooh, that sounds awful. You've talked about this in other podcast episodes, so perhaps what I'm looking for is not so much a step-by-step advice, but some words of encouragement saying if this is worth it, key mindset shifts for someone like me to work on. Hope this resonates with you and your listeners. Here's my portfolio. That's always appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a good way to do it.
It's a great way to do it. What do you think, Jake?
Here's what I think. If you need words of encouragement, I will tell you, looking at your work, thanks for the link to your portfolio, you've got what it takes to be successful in illustration. I think it's just a matter of
we put this out there, like, or
what's that?
I'm sure the listeners are like dying to see what we're seeing.
Yeah, I don't think they gave us permission to share the portfolio. So
I tell you what, we can reach out to that artist, and if she gives us permission, we'll post it. How about that?
Okay. So here's the website, DonnaMakesArt.com.
And so you're just going to err on.
No. If we don't get permission, okay, Daniel can edit it out.
Okay.
It's so much easier to edit it out than to re-record us.
Here's the website. If you guys want to see it, it's childrensbookpro.com.
No. Okay, but how do you deal with lack of motivation, a sense of purposelessness and overwhelm? I can only tell you how I deal with that. And I think what you need is, I've heard it phrased as, you need a soundtrack in your mind, something that you could play to get you pumped up and motivated. And I don't mean a song. I mean like an outcome, a vision of your future. And so right now there's like a handful of them. It's like, why am I taking this job? Or why am I working so hard? Or why should I get up today and like do this hard thing? Well, I have some financial goals. I'd like to pay off my house, you know, before the mortgage, early. I'd like to pay it off early. And so I think, okay, well, if I can land this deal, if I can work on that, I could take a chunk out of that. Not a big one, but it's something. I have children, and I always think, well, I'd really like to pay for their college or to, set them up for a little bit more success or something. I have my own retirement. So there's all these different financial goals and sometimes those work. Sometimes though, they don't work. It's like, the kid can get a job if they have to, or the kids can take care of me. If worse comes to worse, I'm not going to work today. And in those cases, you have to dig a little deeper. And I have this other thing where it's like, what can I do today that the me in 2031 or in 10 years from now is really going to appreciate, going to be grateful for that I did today, and are they going to be happy that I surfed Twitter and answered a bunch of emails? Are they going to be happy that I like sat down and spent 4 hours on a drawing? And it's amazing because I've been doing my career now for 20 plus years. And I have drawings that are 20 years old that are still like feeding me creatively. I'll look through these old files and these old folders and I'll see these drawings and I'll be like, oh, that's a good idea. I could use that to inspire today's work or whatever. So it's like, even just making a drawing that day can benefit you 10 years down the line. So that's another way to get out of bed and to motivate yourself. It could be just a short-term thing. It could be like, hey, if I accomplish what I want to do this month, then I could treat myself to X, Y, and Z. I could treat myself to like something that that you normally wouldn't. And maybe part of that is withholding or delaying a gratification of something as well. So you are motivated to do something. I run a lot, and there was a period there where I was like, oh, I need to shave off, you know, 10 pounds or something. And so I had this cereal that I loved. I love this particular, it's not name brand. It's, nope. Count it's Chocula. The bagged, it's Golden Puffs. It's the, the bagged version.
Yeah.
The wheat. I love it. I love it. So trashy, but I love it. But I told myself, I can't have a bowl until I've ran 10 miles. So every 10 miles I can have a bowl of this. And you better believe I was clocking those, you know. I was like, okay, I'm going to do 5 miles today so I can get 10 miles by tonight and have my bowl of cereal before bed. And so that was just the kind of thing that, and I told people that too. I told people in the house, daddy can't have the cereal unless he's run 10 miles. So if they ever saw me with a bowl, they'd be like, where's your miles? How many miles you do?
Did they hold you to it?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. There's no respect for me in this home.
I love that baby shark. That the baby shark cereal. That's good stuff.
Baby shark. So I don't know. I don't get that joke, but
I'm just riffing with your stupid cereal.
Is there an actual baby shark cereal?
There is. There's anything famous in the kids' world. They make a cereal now. You know what happened to the good old days of Alphabits?
Is that still a thing? I haven't seen that commercial in a while.
Those were so good.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sorry, you sidetracked me on this.
That's true, because like Mr. Beast, the YouTuber, has like a burger joint, right? Like that's a thing now too. Anyway, so the motivation, I think it's telling yourself, if I do X, I'll get Y, and you have to figure out what your Ys are first. And I think that can get you out of bed.
That's pretty good advice, but it's not Michael Jackson level podcaster advice.
It's your Michael Jackson level.
Here I go.
Shamone.
what she's saying, again, looking, diving deep into these words that she's given us, is, you know, it might be a fear of success. She's making her way, and all of a sudden the work's starting to come in, and now she's got to say, okay, this is who I am. I'm this book illustrator, or I don't see whether she's doing children's books or not, but I'm this full-time illustrator kind of thing. And all of a sudden, a little freezing up a little bit because of the fear of what that means in her head, like what that success, what does your life look like? And there's some kind of fear there about what could possibly be. And so it's, maybe she's kind of locking up a little bit. And what I would say is to get rid of the idea, sort of opposite. I'm going to argue with Jake a little bit. Get rid of the idea of what success looks like, because that might be what the factor that's stopping you. Like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be busy all the time. I'm going to have deadlines. And what if I don't hit the deadlines? And what if they don't like all the work I'm doing? And then how am I going to respond to that? And I would say, get rid of all that stuff and go back to these basic little nuggets, I guess. What I kind of think of them is, when you're illustrating, what do you like about each process, each part of the process that you do? Like, okay, like my favorite part, I used to get real nervous because I had so much work coming in and I was getting behind, and I felt the same way you did. I didn't want to do it. I was kind of lagging and almost rather go running or something because it was just a definite thing that I knew what to do. I was just kind of overwhelmed. And so what I told myself is, I'm going to find what I enjoy about each part of it. And so for the early stages, like, I love the research and development because I like finding out new stuff. And so that became my focus, not like, okay, whatever I decide on in this research is now going to end up in illustration. Is that not going to be successful? So I found what I liked about the research, and then the next stage, the sketches and stuff. I really love sitting down with coffee, having a blank sheet of paper. I love the blank sheet of paper and a pencil. Like, it has to be a pencil because I love that scratchy sound of pencil on like a slightly textured surface. I just love the way it feels, and I feel really natural drawing that way. And I like playing with a lot of ideas, just drawing into sort of like starting with one thing and saying, what if I do this? What if I do this? What if I do this? So that's what I'm going to focus on at that stage. And then I did that with each stage. What do I like about color studies? What do I like about doing the final painting? all of it. And I was really specific about it. And I focused on each one of those stages. Okay, here's where I'm at today. I need to do this sketch, this thumbnail sketch, and here's what I like about it. So I'm going to focus on that. And it really took away all that. You know, at the end, if you focus on each thing you like all the way through, the end result is fantastic because you've slowed down and you've made the process as good as you possibly can. And then once I, the last little bit I'll add here is once I turn in the work, I did what I needed to do. I did the best I could. I liked it as I liked every step of it. I didn't skip anything. And if people like it, that's awesome. If they don't like it, I'll try to change it and make it good. Of course, you want to be a pro, but it took away that pressure, I guess, is where I'm going. Mm.
So right. it's like mine is focus on these objectives and these goals outside of the success of the actual thing you're working on. So it's like instead of worrying if your book's going to be on the bestseller list or you're going to win a medal or any of that, it's more like I have these goals outside of my career that I'm trying to accomplish, and I'm using my career to get to those things. Yours is more like, so I'm thinking 10 years in the future. Yours is thinking is more like enjoy the journey, figure out how to enjoy that process so that it in and of itself is fulfilling to you. So you don't even, you're right. Not even worried about success. You're just worried about that day.
Correct.
Will, where do you fall in?
Well, when you guys are done with your psychobabble, you know, Dr. White over there. now, mine, I think is, I'm saying the same kind of things, but it's for me, and we only have our own experience, right? So I love making art. There was only really one time where I couldn't draw, and that was after my wife died a couple of years ago. And I just couldn't find it. And I tried, and it was the weirdest thing. I'm like, I like to draw, but I can't draw anything. And you know, it was writing my book that kind of got me out of that and some distance. And then I ended up doing Inktober, which was a really fun project. But I, in a normal time, that's not really normal. I mean, that's an anomaly when you lose someone that's really close to you.
Right.
In normal situations, there's the freelance work that you get that is uninspiring. And sometimes, you know, you just hate working on that. And then sometimes there's the work that you do because you think you're creating because you're trying to be liked by an art director. So you're trying to second guess. You're making art decisions based on an art director seeing it and going, yes, I want to hire you. Right. And I think what you really should be doing is creating art for yourself. Like anytime I've felt uninspired and I've done a portfolio piece, purely something that I've wanted to do, it does two things. One, I can't wait to work on it because I get to just do whatever I want. I get to do something that I've just dreamt about doing. And the second part of that is it's always led to work. It's always led to projects because art directors have seen it. So I don't know if this will help you because we're all kind of taking stabs at what we think might help. But if you're saying in your letter, you know, a sudden lack of motivation, a sense of purposeness and overwhelm, I mean, I can only dig into my own personal experience, which is whenever I felt like that, I take a break and either go do something completely un-art related, or if I'm going to do something art related, I've got deadlines coming up. And sometimes I'm like, you know what I'm doing today? I'm working on something for myself, working on something fun. And I do something that's just super fun and it always leads to something else. And it always, anyway.
Yeah. I think that's good. The other thing I was thinking about too, my wife was the other morning. She's like, I don't have it in me today. I can't do this today. And essentially, you know, the agreement we have worked out is she does all the household related stuff. I help where I can. I do all the anything to earn money. She helps where she can on that regard. And I know that thing where you just wake up and you're like, I can't do it today. And I remember someone said something like, you know who doesn't think I can't do it today? Sharks. Like a shark doesn't wake up in the morning and think, I can't do it today. I not have it in me to hunt fish, to like eat a seal, you know, to terrorize a boat or whatever sharks do. I can't today. And so I think on some level you have to think to yourself, I'm an artist, I'm an illustrator. This is what I do. And on some level, yes, you could just work when you're inspired and when you're feeling awesome, but then you're totally stuck only having to work whenever these awesome feelings are there and you're feeling like, you know, the world's perfect and the stars are aligned and the perfect song, you know, is playing and you've got the perfect, you know, drink with you and you've got, you know, the right setup and the kids are gone and everything, you know. Those are so few and far between. And when those happen, embrace them, enjoy them. But there's also another level of just showing up and to do the job as sort of like, this is what I do. And there isn't anything romantic about it. And I have an assignment and I'm going to deliver on that assignment, whether it's something from the outside or it's an internal assignment, like I'm making my own webcomic or I'm making, you know, my own pitch. Just show up and work on it. And I think what it is, Seth Godin said this, he's like, and it goes back to my shark thing. It's like plumbers never get like plumber's block. Plumbers never like see a toilet that needs to be unclogged and be like, I don't know how to get through this problem. They roll up their sleeves and they unclog a toilet. And I think writers and artists, sometimes we wait for these muses and this mystical like side, that this inspiration to come. And you just have to roll up your sleeves and do it. And maybe the work isn't going to be great that day. It's not going to be inspired. It's just going to be, you know, something. But that's the thing. It's something instead of nothing. And you add that up over a year of just showing up and doing something, you have a body of work where there's gold in there, there's nuggets in there. You're conditioned and you're trained to work on your stuff and move from there. So, and maybe that's a bleak advice, but it's also practical, I think, if you're wanting to make this a career, because everybody I know who is working consistently is maybe one day out of nine really, really into and loving like what they're working on that day. And the rest of the time, it's a struggle. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard. There's things you can enjoy about it, but there really is like things that are just like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to solve this problem. And there is sort of, I think, joy and pleasure in figuring out how to solve problems, even though you're not like, you know, hitting home runs all mm-hmm. the time.
Right. You do got to show up and be a pro. Got to show up. So that's a good mm-hmm. point too.
Here's another
find what you like about it and then do the work.
Another thing you can do is to find someone to mentor, find someone to help with their art. Mm-hmm. I've always found that when you help other people with the problems that they're having, one, it makes you realize that you have it better. And it mm-hmm. lifts your spirits in a lot of ways to realize like how much you do know. And looking from looking at this, at the work, you know, a mm-hmm. lot. But it always gives me more gratitude and helping someone else always, it never leaves me feeling empty. I always feel good and it changes your attitude. And maybe just having an attitude change would, you know, like it's the same as when you're depressed and you don't have you can't explain why. Like you can't, if you say I'm depressed and then someone says why, and you can't even answer it, right? Mm-hmm. You can't even put it, you don't even have a reason. And you look at all the things that you have and you're like, I have no reason to be depressed, yet I'm depressed. Sometimes you just need something to change the chemistry in your brain. And maybe helping someone else can do that.
Yeah. And that opens up to a whole other thing, which is depression and, you know, clinical depression and things like that. And in that case, my advice is find a good medical professional, a good therapist or somebody to help you solve the problems going on there, because I don't know a way to like power through, yeah, you know, serious depression.
Don't go to Dr. White.
Thing with Lee, are you always up? Like, I don't ever see like a down day. There's maybe like a day where you're angry, but you're always like, go.
My wife makes fun of me because I'm just, I've got an endless amount of energy and I'm super optimistic, like 99% of the time. So mm-hmm. She said it's annoying.
What about, like, how many hours of sleep do you get a night?
4 to 6.
4 to 6. So you can function pretty good on 4?
Yeah, it's just natural. Night? It's not like I set an alarm and I'm just dragging myself out of bed. I just wake up and I'm instantly ready to go.
Yeah, I know, because I start seeing the texts at like 4 in the morning.
Oh yeah. I'm firing them to Will and Jake. Why aren't you guys responding? I'm working here. I'm ready to go.
I try not. So I'm pretty consistent running in the morning and I try to ignore those while I'm running. But the other day when you were like talking about Children's Book Pro, I'm like, I have to answer this right now. Like, I have to respond to this. I ran hard that day because you were frustrating me.
Hey, whatever I can do to get you motivated.
Whatever. That's it funny. Was good. It was a good. I did 6 miles at an 8-minute pace. So that's pretty good.
It's pretty good for this old, really good.
This old body of mine. All right, should I take us out?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Thanks for joining us. 3-Point Perspective is brought to you by SVS Learn, where becoming a great illustrator starts. Your hosts have been Lee White, Will Terry, and I'm Jake Parker. You can find Lee White's work at Lee White Illo on Instagram and leewhiteillustration.com for his website. Will Terry, you can find on Instagram, it's Will Terry Art. And on his website is willterry.com. And I'm on Instagram, I'm Jake Parker, and I can be found on my website at jakeparkerart.com, or you can try mrjakeparker.com. One is for if you like looking at pretty pictures. The other one is if you like mrjakeparker.com is if you like digging around and like uncovering things and poking around and finding stuff. So much stuff on that website. Anyways, so many links and folders and things like that. Anyways, if you like this discussion we had today, if you felt like we did not stick the landing on these questions and you have a better way to answer them, knock yourself out. Go over to the forum, svslearn.com forum, where we've got a topic on today's episode. You can join into the discussion there and you can take issue with stuff, or you can back us up, or you can share your experience. We'd love for you to log on over there and let us know what you think. As always, review the podcast when you can. We'd love getting reviews. And I think that's it. Lastly, our SVS team is Daniel Tu. He's our producer. His website is daniel2.co, and Tu spelled T-U. Our production manager for SVS Learn is David Bro. Special thanks to him. And does David have a website? DavidBro.com?
.com, yep.
.com.
And Bro is spelled, not B-R-O, I wish it was, but it's B-R...
A-U-D.
A-U-D. B-R-A-U-D.
Broad.
And then lastly, special thanks to Lisa Fott, who handles all of our social media stuff.
Fott is an F-O-T.
No, it's F-A-U-G-H-O-U-T. Everybody. That's it. Thanks. Well, see ya.
Okay.
What?
Maybe we should stick around a little while. And
This episode is like seriously 50% banter. And like 40.
Oh, dude, we were all over those questions.
You think so?
Yeah.
Good stuff. Hey,
I think it was really good stuff. We had different opinions about how to solve it. Unlike normal.
We backtracked. We fumbled.
Yeah.
We nailed it. There were some home runs. It was a pretty entertaining game.
people should like this one, I guess.
Hey, trivia question. What's more expensive, a McDonald's sandwich or filet mignon?
All right.
Filet mignon.
Wait, did you start? Wait, hold on. Did you start this out with trick question?
No, trivia. Trivia question.
Oh, I feel like it's a trick question because otherwise you want to lean into the obvious. Oh, of course it's going to be the filet mignon. And then you add, no. Per ounce, a Big Mac.
Life hack. You ready?
Yeah. All right, let's hear it.
So if you went to some place like Outback Steakhouse and you ordered a filet mignon, you'd spend about $50 for that dinner, right?
All right.
Yeah.
But if you go, we've got this Winco out here, and if you buy the whole filet, they're like $22. You could feed 8 people. If you fed 8 people a McDonald's sandwich at $4 a sandwich, $32 plus tax.
There we go. There's the trick part of the question.
You can feed 8 people filet mignon off this roast.
Well, the difference, though, that you're saying there is
I have to cook
one it. Is, yeah, you're going to a restaurant versus making food yourself. So that would be the real question is it more expensive to go to a restaurant versus making something yourself? Almost anything making it yourself is going to be cheaper. I mean,
I bet a lot of people wouldn't think filet mignon could be cheaper.
Yeah, but you're combining two. You're doing, I'm going to make it at home, and I'm also going to buy it in bulk and feed a huge amount of people.
Just saying. It's pretty cool.
It is cool. You frame the question very specifically.
You trim it. You wrap it with string. You slather it in Dijon mustard, salt and pepper.
I'm hungry now.
Kosher salt.
Getting to be lunchtime.
Throw that baby on the grill.
I mean, I went to a restaurant for my wife's birthday the other night, and that was definitely, you know, I had less food than I normally did and paid half as much food for twice as much money. Mm-hmm. But was it worth it? Oh my gosh, yes.
Good food.
Absolutely. Solid. I mean, my wife's a gourmet level chef at this point, so I can't take her to Applebee's.
Right.
You know, so I took her to award-winning female head chef, which you don't see a ton of, here at a restaurant in Nashville. And it was just ridiculously good and food that we've never had before. So that's always a bonus. So you know, it's just different levels of pay. It's a, you can't compare it with a Big Mac.
Yeah.
I'm saying. What's the most you've ever paid for a meal?
That's embarrassing. Probably
is it high or low?
Probably Ruth's Chris.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, like a New York steak is probably $50 there, $50 or $60. And then your sides are separate. The way they do it, they do family style sides. So you know,
I
feel like the most I've ever paid for a meal. I took all my kids. I got 5 kids. We went to New York City and had lunch at Shake Shack.
Oh.
And I had to take out a second mortgage to pay for everything.
Did you do the original Shake Shack in Central Park?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I've eaten there like 5 times now, probably.
Do you know the story behind that?
Shake Shack?
Yeah.
No, what's the story?
So I can't remember the name of the guy, but he had a gourmet restaurant across the street from, you know, like blocks away, and the restaurant wasn't doing great. So he was like, you know, I bet you we could take gourmet type food that we could make in this restaurant and sell it in a fast food style. And we'll sell it for a premium, but we'll sell and we'll make it up in volume. And we can use the Shake Shack to help keep this other restaurant alive. And what ended up happening was Shake Shack became his deal, you know.
Right.
It became so popular that they would sell out of food in that original one.
Yes. Ask me if I've ever sat down at a Shake Shack to eat. Never.
Because
even when you paid all that money?
There's never a seat available.
There's never a seat.
Oh. Well, I have when I've been by myself or with one other person, we've been able to get a seat. But when you're on vacation with a family of seven,
yeah,
it's very hard to get a seat at a Shake Shack.
How much do you think their success is that name? I think they have an amazing name.
It's an amazing name. It really is.
A smooth name.
I think it's one of those things where it's like you put everything together and it becomes popular, and then it's popular because it's popular.
Right.
Like we have a Shake Shack here in Gilbert. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. And people go to it. It's always busy. It's running, it's humming all the time. And I would much rather have like an In-N-Out burger.
Oh, really?
Well, speaking of that, it's a way to make everybody on the West Coast mad at you is to insult In-N-Out. But I don't get it. I mean, I seriously, no, it's fine. Lee, it's Lee, fine.
This is what separates the humans.
It's fine. It's
you have to know who the aliens are.
I'd rather have five guys.
You know, did you order it with grilled onions?
I got the grilled onions.
I've
done animal style. I've done all the different styles they have there. It's
you'd rather have five guys, huh?
All day long.
Oh my gosh. Five guys.
What about
too many guys?
What about Smashburger?
I could do Smashburger.
Smashburger's good. I've never had a bad Smashburger.
I'll tell you guys this. I have a weird sense of math. Oh, it only happens when I eat and only after a certain amount, spending a certain amount. Like when I go out to a fancy restaurant, like I did the other night for the birthday, I do this weird math where I just feel super guilty for paying a lot for food. So I always do this weird math in my head where I'm like, okay, I sold three prints last week. So this meal's sort of free. I always try to equate it to something like, okay, we got the federal stimulus check last week. So this meal doesn't really cost me anything. I don't want to acknowledge that I'm paying that much for food. It's the dumbest thing. I've done that before too.
I do it all the time. Yeah. Well, I did get that, you know, that royalty statement and you know, there was a little bit of check there. I guess so we can do this. I can get this bike you know, for the kid.
Is that called, what is that, rationalization kind of thing?
Right.
It's ridiculous. I do it with food more than any other thing.
Yeah.
It's dumb.
Well, I gotta go prepare a lecture.
I do too.
I'm out of here.
Ironically,
I unfortunately do too. These lectures we are knocking out though. The lecture we did yesterday, I'm going to go and throw this out there. I don't know if this will be on our podcast or not, but that's the best lecture of all time given in human history on drawing environments.
The three-part environment lecture.
Are you including our sections in there with this pronouncement?
Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying. Ours is the best. That was good. I mean, because it really is. I was talking to Lisa about it today. Three different viewpoints that I could never do the viewpoint that you guys are presenting your lectures under. I don't think that way. And it's just different. And so you just couldn't get that from a singular teacher. That'd be impossible.
Lee, are you good at humility? Is that one of your strong points?
I am the best at humility. I learned.
You just wait until you see my, I'm working on how to do spreads, how to do a spread.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just wait for that. You thought environments was good.
Are you using a butter knife? Or are you using like?
No. I'm talking two pages of illustrations.
Oh, you're not using a Miracle Whip or
no.
Some kind of a Thousand Island spread or something.
Anywho. Okay,
this has got to eventually end.
Yeah. This is over.
No.
Bye, guys.
No. I don't think anybody's still listening right now.
I'm turning off the recording and done.